Richmond Street. And I'm kind of taking a risk here. I'm reading these from my computer. I shouldn't have just downloaded some new antivirus software, so I don't know. It might shut my thing off. Of course, I can do all from memory, but I figure if I read these from our site, some people will, you know, get interested and will get more track on the site. Let me also mention, when you go to our blog site, which is the announcer gives you that thing at the end of the program, you can find my name on there, John Chiarello, and then you search for me on Facebook under my name, and we have a lot of friends on Facebook. That's where we do most of like the talking back and forth, especially friends from New Jersey and all. Now, the last few weeks, I have been doing apologetics, which is a defense of the faith. It's basically different ways Christians have defended the faith. Now, I have a lot of posts on the site under that section, evolution, cosmology, apologetics, and I'm just reading a few, but there's so many that, and there's different fields that you use this in. 1 week I'm going to do evolution. I'll just have to do that from memory because there's too many things. And the reason is there are some, there are a lot of Christians, and some these last few years that have been putting theistic evolution more, which they feel evolution is a tool that God uses and so forth. But the science behind evolution is what we want to get into. And ultimately, the science shows you have microevolution. You have evolution in the sense that species within their own kind do change. That's what Darwin observed on the Galapagos Islands. Finches, beaks, over time, adapting. But what you don't find in the science is one species changing into another species. So the science itself, apart from, because most people, when you begin debating evolution, they think you're getting into the Bible. Quote, that's the Bible, your belief in God, but science is evolution, or evolution is truth. That's just not fact. There is a middle ground in the sense of even if you use some, well, I guess I should have done evolution today, but I'll get into that in a few weeks, okay? For today, I want to do the historical argument. A lot of times, right now, when I just made this post a few months back, Dan Brown, who wrote The Da Vinci Code, also just came out with another book. Now, Dan Brown's books, they deal with a lot of the myths that were myths. They were even early myths about Christianity and about God and about Jesus. And a lot of people are unaware that you have early fake stories about God and about the Bible and so forth. Most Christians that study this realize that these are the Gnostic cults, Docetism, Gnosticism, so forth, and these were the groups that early on kind of came up with their own books and stuff, the Gospel of Thomas, things like that. Now, I'm going to get into that in another week as well, but what I want to say is the Dan Brown books, what they have said in the Da Vinci Code, which is very popular the last few years as I'm making this tape, they confused a lot of people. A lot of people felt like a lot of these fake books, which all of the Christians, all of the church, and all the church fathers would reject the Gnostic writings. There were a few books that Christians did debate, but it's confusing to the average reader because the average reader thinks, oh, well, maybe Jesus was married, and maybe, you know, Mary really is the missing thing that came down from the past, and all these kind of fake stories, people, these things get thrown in. So that's kind of why I want to do a little of the historical argument. Now, I'm going to read halfway through this post right here. Jesus, our Christian experience, let's see, I wanted to write it right here. The Da Vinci Code. These books appeal to man's natural desire for supernatural stuff. The problem with Dan Brown is he mixes all types of fairy tale stories in with some valid points. The average reader can't really tell the difference. I have a book in my study titled The Lost Books of the Bible. I bought it years ago for a few dollars at Half Price Books. It really is a treasure. I mean, it does have some great books from antiquity in it. To get it for a few dollars was a great deal. Now, some of the books were legitimate contenders to possibly have made it into the Bible. I'm going to move my computer here. The Epistle of Barnabas, the Didache, possibly the Shepherd of Hermes. Now, these are all books that were early books that some Christians had in their Bibles. We don't have them as canon, but they're still good books. I just finished, by the way, reading the Epistle of Barnabas. I read it every year or so, and a few of the ones that the early Christians read, I try to reread those. Okay, there were a few books that the early church debated about, including in the canon. But you also had a plethora of obviously fake stuff. The Gnostic writings were all known as cheap imitations of the real thing. These writings are from the late 2nd, early 3rd centuries. No legitimate argument was made about these writings. All Christians rejected them as being authoritative. But the Dan Brown stories have people thinking that these writings were at one time up for possible inclusion into the canon. That's just not so. How do we tell the difference between stuff that's historically reliable and stuff that isn't? In the field of historiography, which is the art of looking at ancient writings and weighing their legitimacy, you have scholars who have spent years doing this sort of thing. You look at the actual recording of the events. Were they written down fairly closely to the event? Did the authors know the people they were writing about? Were they eyewitnesses? How many manuscripts are left? Were they widely accepted? There are real ways to determine stuff like this. The Bible stands head and shoulders above all other ancient writings. The Greek New Testament, I just lost my side here. Let me do it from memory. The Greek New Testament has, early on, we have over 20,000 pieces or manuscript evidence that backs up the Bible. Now, in the other fields of old writings, things like Homer's Iliad, which was, I think, about 800 years before Christ, but it's like one of the oldest works that we have, and that doesn't have nearly as many. And most other early writings that we accept today as just historically true things, most of those have just under 100, 20 or 30 manuscripts. So for the Greek New Testament, or for the New Testament, and the many different languages, Greek but Latin and other languages that we have, it's in the thousands. So that's a historical accuracy that says, okay, we believe that the Bible is not just some made-up thing. We believe that the Bible has historical truth. Now, when you get into these debates, it doesn't prove what Christians referred to as the inspiration of the Bible. What that proves is simply that it's historically accurate. When Christians get into the doctrine of inspiration, that's another thing. Now, there was a famous man in the 19th century, 20th century, out of the universities out of Germany, University of Popular Christian University or Theological School out of Marburg, Germany, had a real popular professor. His name is Rudolf Bultmann. Now, Bultmann is known in the scholarly world as one of the liberal scholars. And when you say liberal in theology, it's not talking about political liberalness, nor is it really talking about the fundamentalist arguments. Sometimes the fundamentalist churches where I live in this part of the country, they kind of have, they call people liberals because they're different Christian groups. You know, maybe the Assembly of God or Baptist fundamentalists would say they're liberal or whatever. In essence, that's not the actual meaning of the term historically. Historically, liberalism, Bultmann's type, said the Bible really has no historical truth. It's just myth. It's filled with good stories. And if we want to make the Bible relevant for today in this advanced stage of knowledge, the way we're going to do it is we have to demythologize the Bible. So Bultmann would approach it and saying, Okay, and you know, these are good stories. Jesus multiplying the loaves and fishes and so forth, and it really didn't happen, but it was a good story. You should share your lunch with people. You know, silly stuff like that. So Bultmann popularized that, and it became, you know, accepted by a lot of people. Now, at that time, late 19th, early 20th century, a lot of the schools of thought in higher learning and education were saying that the Bible and the scriptures also were written older. Most Christians, for centuries, believed that the Gospels and the New Testament were written, you know, within 30 years or so of the events. We do know that the Gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that they didn't write the Gospels down when Jesus was here. But we know that the writers of the Gospels were eyewitnesses, or some of the writers of the New Testament were living at the time, even though they might have written them later. So you have kind of some teachers that say, well, they were written within 30 years or so of the actual events, you know, AD 50, 60, 70. That's kind of acceptable. So a lot of people believe Revelation was written like it around AD 90. But when the doubt came by Bultmann and others, then it became fashionable for these higher institutions to say, well, the Bible was written in the second century, most of these books and so forth. And that would cast some question on historical accuracy of Scripture, because the post I was reading before it disappeared from my computer was saying the further away the recording of the events are from the actual events, that it gives less historical weight to the validity of the events. And a lot of the liberal schools were saying that that the Gospels were not accurate pictures, but they were simply pictures of the way the church came to view Jesus, but it's not really historically reliable. Well, that's why, and of course I don't accept that, but that's why the later dating of books of the Bible was sort of like a way to cast more doubt on the historical accuracy of Scripture. So your famous man, Sir Ramsay, and Sir Ramsay was a historian, archaeologist, an evidence seeker, and so he actually went and to the Middle East, and he went and did historical research on all of the names of governors and political names that we find in the book of Acts and in the book of Luke. Luke was a historian. Luke wrote the Gospel of Luke, and he also wrote the book of Acts. So you could go see, well, you know, was there really everyone in the known world went to be taxed at this time that the Gospels speak about? Is Pontius Pilate a real person? And all the other names, historical facts and figures. Well, to most people's surprise that were involved in higher education, Ramsay found that actually the Bible was written early. It wasn't considered a historically inaccurate document. It wasn't just this book full of good stories, Bolton's myths. It was actually historically accurate. So Ramsay and others, of course, later come, most Christian theologians now accept the first century writing of the Gospels and of the whole New Testament. Hardly anybody now says, yes, these books were written in the second century. So this is an argument from the historical accuracy of Scripture, that we have a lot of manuscripts. We have proofs that they're historical truths contained in Scripture. Now, we can't prove to the unbelieving world that Jesus rose from the dead, but if the Gospels and our Bibles contain that, which they do, and they contain a lot of other historically accurate truths, well, then that gives weight, it gives validity, because a lot of the doubter was simply saying that they were not using the same criteria of fact, that they were holding the Bible historically to a much higher criteria than they do with all the other ancient books. And the other ancient books that we have, that have come to us, we don't have the same amount of manuscripts, we don't have the same amount of proof, but yet generally historians accept those books. But yet when it came to Scripture, no, they had all these wild criteria that were holding up against the Bible, and it was just intellectually dishonest. So this is today's argument from apologetics. We have an historically accurate account in the scriptures. Getting into the infallibility of scripture, that would be a whole other thing. Okay, go to our site, read these things. If you want to write, it's Corpus Christi Outreach Ministries, P.O. Box 181-256, Corpus Christi, Texas 7480. And go to our Facebook page. That's the place where we interact. God bless.